Stephen Kruites on SAFM.
I think really important to continue that conversation that John started about low turnout. You heard him speaking to Professor Susan Boyce, and let's get another view on this. Professor William Gumede joins us now. You'll know, of course, he has been studying our democracy for many, many years. William Gumede, Professor Gumede, good morning and thank you for your time.
Good morning to the listeners.
A low turnout today. We were always expecting, a low turnout yesterday. In a way, this was always going to be a low turnout election. And I've been interested how some people have immediately said, and I think both are right here, by the way. Some people have immediately said this shows anger and frustration and despondency in our politics. And others have immediately said, well, look, it's a pandemic. It was a shortened election campaign. The parties haven't been campaigning in the normal way. People have got other things to worry about. I mean, where do you fall within all of those, within that whole spectrum?
I think, we've been unable clearly to overcome. We've got a specific political culture in South Africa, coming from the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, where people think protest in the street is very effective. So rather than sort of voting as a form of protest, when I mean from a protest, it's not a protest not to stay at home and not to vote, because that's what people, I think when people are angry, dissatisfied, mostly with the ANC, they stay at home as a form of protest, almost like a street protest. Now, unfortunately, the magic of democracy is the way you need to protest with your vote is to vote for another party. Even if you don't like their party. So so that part of the democracy and the voting part of it, unfortunately, we haven't been able to get that into our political culture. So our political culture is still sitting in a sort of the old pre-apartheid culture of people think it's much more effective to protest in the street. Now, of course, to protest in the street is very short-term. So you protest once, like now we saw ahead of the elections, over power, the government intervened because it wants to look good, and it's, electricity gets switched on. And then, of course, for the next 5 years, people will be without electricity. And then ahead of the next election, there will be protests again. So that's a short-termism of, street protests. Now, when you begin to vote, to protest with your ballot, now that becomes a different thing. And you say, well, actually, to hold my own party accountable, I will vote for another party, but even if I didn't like that other party. Now, that is really long-term change, and that will bring accountability. So there's a gap in the system, that sort of thing. It's also to do, with, people like me who supposed to do the voter education, civil society, and so on, so that we're not making that sort of thing clear. Voting doesn't just mean you vote for a party you love. You can also vote, very importantly, to bring accountability, vote for a party you hate.
When we talk about turnout and we talk about the pandemic, there's a sort of fairly obvious point to make, which is that the country which has been damaged the most or lost the most people due to the pandemic in terms of proportion of the population is the United States. They had an election last year at which they had a turnout in which the loser would have won in any previous election. That's how high turnout was. It shows you that the pandemic is not necessarily, if people are, in the US, maybe I should use the word incited, but if people are excited about an election, if it's important to them, it was in the US, they will vote despite a pandemic.
No, absolutely. I don't think it's anything to do with a pandemic because, people don't really make up their minds, in the weeks before elections. The sort of thing is in your subconscious, you think about it, for months, for years. There are only a few people really that have, days before the election really will then make up their mind. People decide quite long ahead that they're not going to vote. And so on, or to say going to vote for a different party. So I wouldn't put to blame the pandemic. Those, of course, who were not blamed for those in any case. The pandemic would become an excuse or, bad weather in Western Cape, for example. But I think really is, people are dissatisfied and people are very angry. And people also are hopeless. So I think what a pandemic did do, it has caused such distress, loss of jobs, loss of businesses, and then the corruption and state failure, all of that has made people very hopeless. Now, the thing is that sort of when people are hopeless, What people should not do and what we've done there is to stay home and not vote, because that really will mean that the thing about not voting is the party that you're dissatisfied with actually sneak back in. And so you get the same thing going, and it becomes more and more, sort of a loop, destructive loop of hopelessness. And that is why it's so important, this idea of voting. For the long term, most probably, other countries try to deal with this sort of thing differently. Some countries, like New Zealand, what they do is they made it compulsory to vote. If you're a citizen, you have to vote, so that's what some countries do. Other countries, what they do is they add to the ballot. So if you, when you get your ballot, so there's another box that you can tick, and that box say that you do not agree with any of the parties. And then they calculate that also at the end. And sometimes, that vote where people vote for no other party actually is a bigger vote than for any other party. And then, there is assessment of whether actually, the party that has won actually has, let's call it the legitimacy, or whether there has to be a revote or and so on. So these are some of the options for the long term as a country perhaps we could look at.
There's so many different things to talk about in an election, especially a local election. There are projections now. This is from the CSIR with the SABC, and their projections at the moment. These projections are being updated every half an hour. I think the CSIR, Professor Gilmed, you may agree or disagree, but in my experience, the CSIR has been very, very good at this. But they've got the ANC on a projection at 47% of the national vote, the DA 22.7%, and the EFF at 10.3%. A lot of people are going to say a lot of things about the ANC falling below 50%, but this is a local election. So how much significance do you give it?
Yeah, this is our bellwether election. This is a very critical election for us going. And this is also sort of 3 decades. Now, if you look at liberation movements after the Second World War, when they come to power, these sort of dominant type of parties like the ANC, normally after 3 decades, you get then it's your second generation. So you then is the generation that begins to vote, who actually, when they grew up, when they were born in the sort of post-apartheid era, and they only saw the ANC as a political party, a governing party, so they didn't have any sense of apartheid and so on, or if it was in other countries, of colonialism and so on. So that's how they view the politics. And so that entry normally of that group and that change the voting patterns of a country. And that is also where the dominant party, if it didn't deliver and so on, now gets outvoted because, a whole new generation of voters who don't vote on loyalty and possibly not on ethnicity or region and so on, they begin to vote for other parties. And also around that time, also 3 decades, is also when new parties formed, a lot of breakaways and so on. So we're in that sort of space, we're sort of the end of the dominance. So I think our local government elections actually is the beginning, of the end of the dominance of the ANC. So that's a really absolutely crucial election, almost like a bellwether. Our country will be different from this election onwards. And the trend will continue. So I think the next national elections is very likely the ANC will even drop further, maybe getting to that 40% floor, 42, 43. So I think this is a tectonic change, a generational change right here. So of course, with all the things that are happening around us, we miss out on that detail. But this is a really dramatic moment in our politics.
It's interesting to go through it, because the Democratic Alliance only on 22.7. So that's quite a big loss from 2016. They were on 27% there. And the EFF goes to 10.3. In 2016, they were 8.2. I have to say, the DA figure I expected. I expected a loss for the DA. I expected the EFF to gain more, though.
No, I didn't expect them to give up. I think that really is the realistic where they are. You have to, in the makeup of South Africa's politics, so they've taken their populist vote, and their aim is to be less populist. So there is a ceiling on populism, I think, in South Africa. So that ceiling is about 10%. Most probably, they can push it up in the long term to like 14-15%. But I don't think populism in South Africa can go beyond that. And then there's also, of course, a populist component within the ANC itself. You know, the Zumas, Jacob Zuma, Ismail Kasule, and so on. So if there's a realignment within the ANC itself, and a populist breakout or the populist, the control of the ANC and the other group comes out, and then maybe they may actually, the country may see a populist realignment where you have EFF populism and ANC populism somehow coming together or so on. But again, as I say, you know, from a national point of view, populism, I think, around 15-16%, that is most probably the ceiling, and that I cannot imagine to go beyond it. The country is so too diverse for populism, you know, to extend far beyond that.
Sure, that's very interesting. Was load shedding a big factor in the vote? I mean, either way, especially if the ANC's lost so much, I mean, and the timing of it, and certainly from the behavior of, you know, how the ANC reacted to it, it made it seem they thought it was a big factor.
Again, I don't think the load shedding was. It's sad to say that, you know, as South Africans, we are used to load shedding. I mean, it's heartbreaking to say that because, you know, that's really lowering our standards. But I think, people are used to load shedding. I thought load shedding would have had an opposite effect in terms of people would be angry and vote for other parties and not the ANC because of load shedding. Because, you know, load shedding, it's so destructive. It's not just an inconvenience, but it destroys the economy, it destroys jobs, it destroys service delivery. So, just the idea, the symbol of load shedding itself should, you know, make people's mind, should force people to make up their mind to vote one way or the other. Because it so directly impacts on their life, on the children. They can't have proper schooling, on them losing their jobs because the business are closed. So, you know, it's sort of been the opposite effect rather than keeping people at home.
I really appreciate the time, Professor William Gumede. Thank you very much indeed. The Executive Chair of the Democracy Works Foundation, author of the book Restless Nation as well. A lot to talk about, of course, with the elections. We'll continue these conversations. We'll speak to the analyst Aubrey Machitri in a moment. It's 11 minutes now to 9.
Stephen Grootes on SAFM.
10 minutes to 9. Well, there'll be plenty of news about the local elections here on SAFM through the day. We'll continue the conversation for a few moments. Kathy Mokgwana will take over. And there'll just be more and more coverage as more and more results come through. Let's continue the conversations we've been having and speak to the political analyst, someone who really understands our country in a very, very fundamental way. I'm talking, of course, about Aubrey Machitri. Tokoza Gogo.
Tokoza Kesa.
There's been a low turnout. People have been talking about that a huge amount. Professor William Gumede, he's been talking to us a moment ago. He said that this was an important election because it shows a generational change or a generational shift. Do you think we're beginning to see that in some of the numbers that we're coming through? Our country is changing right before us.
Well, I'll differ slightly, Stephen, because the young people... if you look at the registration figures, even the last ones and of other elections, the young people do not materialize significantly. So to the extent that the lower voter turnout is about an electorate that has been disengaging from the democratic and electoral process, young people have been doing it for several elections before this. So what this means is that those who have been voting, particularly those who have been supporting the ANC, are disengaging more and more. It was my expectation that this election was never going to be about who to vote for, but whether to vote at all. And the answer came very emphatically that the vast majority of the electorate decided not to vote. And I think it will be mainly at the expense of the ANC, because we can assume that the preponderance of those who stayed away are those who support the ANC, who are unhappy about the ANC. And the preponderance of those, as we expected, who were going to turn up yesterday, are white voters who support traditional white parties such as the DA and the FF Plus. I expect the FF Plus to make gains at the expense of the DA, because its core constituency is unhappy about what the DA has become.
in a way, to sort of add to what you say, I think, is the fact that from the numbers that I've seen, the province with the lowest turnout is Northwest. And that's also the province that probably has had, for political reasons, the biggest problems with service delivery. I'm not saying that it's necessarily the worst province, but we had, I mean, famously an ANC council with two mayors and two speakers. The Northwest has had all of these problems, and that's where you see the lowest turnout. I mean, voters are saying something.
You're right, Stephen. The ANC, election after election, since 2009, when the downward trend begins, keeps on saying it is a listening organization. What voters through this low voter turnout are saying is that the ANC has not been listening, because I think what the ANC has failed to internalize is that there will come a time when the so-called key motive force of the revolution, that is the people, decouple their interests from those of the ANC. And they've been doing this in two ways. You have a portion that has been staying away. The portion that has been voting increasingly has been voting for other parties. But such a low voter turnout is troubling for me in terms of what it says about the state of our democracy. We analysts and academics tend to argue that when you have a low voter turnout, it shows that a democracy is maturing. For me, that is patent nonsense. What it shows is that the electorate and citizens in general are disengaging, and therefore the democracy itself is unhealthy.
So, of course, the next question then, and I mean this is a big question, is how do we re-energize our democracy? There'll be some people who will say, well, one way you can do it is have huge division, because that, again, to use the United States example, I was discussing that with Professor Gumede earlier, making the point that despite a pandemic, they had an incredibly high turnout for their presidential elections last year. We don't want to energize our democracy in that way. What we probably want to do is to make people feel that politics actually works for them. In other words, that the formal political systems we have, that voting results in their lives improving. And until that happens, people probably aren't going to vote.
Well, if you look at previous elections from 1994, local government elections have tended to bring a low voter turnout. And it is the black voters who have not turned up for local government elections. But they do turn up for provincial and national elections. The question is whether they will. In other words, will those that traditionally supported the ANC do what they've done in previous elections to turn up for national and provincial elections in 2024? And if they do turn up, even if they do turn up, they don't turn up in as significant numbers as we've seen in past elections. I suspect what we must start speculating about now, contrary to what I have been saying, is that the ANC will fall below 50% within three elections. But I think we must countenance the possibility that this may happen as early as 2024, sure. In which case then we have this election being a watershed election, and we might see some serious realignment in the 2024 elections. The question is whether that realignment will re-energize our politics or will render them even more unstable.
You're the first person, Aubrey, to make that prediction at this stage. Let the record reflect if and when it happens that you are the first person. I mean, we're talking about a major, major change to our politics here. And I suppose in a way, 2016 was a major change to our politics, because without it, I don't know what would have happened with the ANC's leadership conference a year later.
You're right. It's a watershed election. Unfortunately, what this election is showing is that there's something about our politics that is dying. And therefore, there's something about our democracy that is dying. The level of disengagement that this low voter turnout betrays should worry us, because the question is, outside democratic processes, what are people going to do to try and effect change in their lives? And I'm afraid we must countenance the possibility that when they act outside the democratic process, because they've given up on the capacity of the democratic process to deliver change, the things they do to effect that change may be unhealthy for that democracy itself.
Sure. Interesting. Obviously, there are going to be consequences, and I'm talking about internal party consequences for this election. And firstly, probably within the Democratic Alliance. I mean, the politics of the ANC is very complex at the moment. I mean, when hasn't it been? But I suspect that John Steenhuisen, I mean, maybe is going to have a very complicated time over the next few months. Would I be wrong to suggest that?
You are absolutely correct. In fact, I'd be surprised if he is re-elected at the next Federal Congress, because what's very clear is that the gap between the qualitative elements in the leadership of Helen Zille and the rest is huge. So you have Helen Zille and the rest, and therefore the DA is struggling to survive the departure of Helen Zille as the leader of the Democratic Alliance. And I think John Steenhuisen has been terribly exposed, because his limitations have come to the fore quite strongly. I think the conversation the DA is already having is about who is going to succeed John Steenhuisen at his next federal congress.
It's very interesting to see that. And I mean, within the ANC, are there going to be consequences for President Ramaphosa for this? I mean, people have been predicting that the ANC would lose a significant share of the vote. On the projections that we have, it has. I mean, what happens next? At the same time, of course, I said it's complicated, because it seemed that he was in the ascendancy to an extent.
Well, I think the blame game has already started. There are those who are going to argue that you cannot see what happened to the Secretary General of the ANC, the engine of the party, and not think that that will impose some kind of instability. Because with the ructions we've seen around Ace Magashule, what we have seen is the center being compromised, the engine of the party being compromised. To some extent, the capacity of that engine to deliver electoral support to the ANC. So, in which direction will the finger of blame point in that regard? I think it will point in the direction of the president of the ANC. Secondly, the president of the ANC says to the country, the ANC is accused number one when it comes to corruption, and then he goes house to house telling people, go and vote for this accused number one. That's another thing. In the 2019 election, the ANC would have fared much worse were it not for the Ramaphosa factor. With this low voter turnout, it means the Ramaphosa factor itself did not kick in. In other words, the kind of confidence people had in Ramaphosa, the hope that he would deliver a new dawn, has turned into a false dawn. Hence, you have what we saw yesterday with regard to the low voter turnout. So I think the ANC is going to be a very unstable space in the lead up to its conference in 2022 in December, partly because of the blame game, but partly because the sectional divides are going to deepen, and there's going to be an attempt to pin the blame only on Cyril Ramaphosa as part of a strategy to undermine the faction that supports him.
Aubrey Machiqui, sir, I appreciate the time as always. Thank you very much indeed. All right, I've really enjoyed being with you today. Privileged to be with you, I must say, on Election Results Day 2021. A lot more to come from Mdu, Stunza, Zelma, Joey, myself. Look after yourself. You're with SFM leading the conversation just after 9 o'clock.